Cultural Senator, Mr. Leydra, ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to this event looking at the question, how political is the Bauhaus? This event is being held in the opening weekend of the Bauhaus year that is being celebrated this year. And I'm using the word celebrated advisedly, it has to be said. Now, our question in this context is, how topical is the Bauhaus? Does the Bauhaus have something to say to us today in the situation that we face? That's a situation in which right-wing nationalists are attacking cultural institutions under the guise of the call for political neutrality. Cultural institutions are being put under pressure. People are being excluded or supposed to no longer take part in dialogue. That's the situation that we currently face. And that will be filtering through into the programme we're looking at today. I'd like to thank everybody who fairly spontaneously arranged this event and made it possible. I'd like to thank our Senator for Cultural Affairs, Klaus Leydra, Ronald Schmidt-Werther, the Board of Trustees of the Bauhaus year, also supported this event. I'm also very grateful to Arch Plus, which organized this event at very short notice in conjunction with us. And I'd like to thank all of the artists and academics and scholars who are going to be talking to us on behalf of this event over the next few hours. Now, it's a Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And getting here, certainly by public transport, was not at all easy, let alone by private car. And that such crowds have flooded into the House of World Cultures this afternoon shows how important this event is for all of us. We meet today in a building that was constructed by an architect called Hugh Stubbins. He'd actually studied with Walter Gropius himself. So in a sense, in the shape of this building after the Second World War, one could say that the Bauhaus thus returned to Berlin. The project is directly a political project. This building, originally the Congress Hall, was a gift from the Americans. As far as they were concerned, it was a symbol of freedom and democracy as a counterpart to the Stalin Alley in the east of the city. So it was a political project in the context of the Cold War. However, the building isn't built on a neutral spot. Before the Second World War, Jewish families lived here. You'll all be familiar with Hirschfeld's sexual clinic. He was a sexologist, and the clinic was right on this very site. There was also a Jewish family named Hyman. The father of the family had already died by the Nazi era. The sons emigrated. The mother was killed in a concentration camp. And it was a German war profiteer, somebody who benefited from fascism, who sold this land to the city of Berlin in the 50s, making a huge profit as well, actually. So it's not a neutral spot at all. The question, how political is the Bauhaus, or how political was the Bauhaus initially, is something that can be answered very easily looking at its early days. Many of those involved in the Bauhaus participated in the November Revolution. It was clear that this was a revolution against the Wilhelminian structure of Germany, against a state based on the notion of authority and hierarchy. But it was also a project in a context in which the civilizatory project within Europe was going through an enormous crisis of meaning, precisely because of the First World War. Barbarism had re-emerged and reared its ugly head once again, right in the heart of purportedly civilized circles. The Bauhaus was developed on the basis of a political attitude, drawing on design, art, and crafts, and looking right back to the Gothic era. And art, crafts, and design were to be the basis for the to form the material context of a new society, and thus to change society itself as well, to create new forms of life and living and new kinds of people. And that per se, of course, was quite clearly a political project. And we can see how this political project became debased step by step during the Weimar era. There's a very interesting political and indeed art project in this context. Via Lewandowski developed this project, and that looked at the concept of the waiting room. During the research work for this project, he looked at the uniformity of these spaces and realized that it actually had its roots in the Bauhaus. Ernst Neufert in the 1920s had developed standards, focusing initially on so-called social construction, building for the masses, and looked at standardization procedures, very successfully, in fact. He wrote a book which is now a textbook. And when the Nazis seized power, he actually wanted to leave Germany, but his book had been such a great hit that he actually decided to stay and continued to work in Nazi Germany. In 1943, he became Reich official in charge of construction standards. And in his role as a standardizer, he was also responsible for standardizing the barrack huts in the concentration camps. So what you can see looking at this is that the Bauhaus history of the 1920s and 1930s is neither black nor white. It's sort of grey, indeed blackish grey. You have individuals facing a political situation that they didn't know how to respond to, or to which they gave over and over again the wrong responses. You can see this looking at Neufert. You can see this belief that things could be created entirely removed from politics. And what they didn't realize is that matter matters, to introduce an echo of Bruno Latour here. So matter is significant. Matter matters and has to be included in the equation. Right from the outset, the Bauhaus was an international project with teaching staff from across Europe and students from all over the world. An exchange between Bauhaus and the rest of the world was a constant process of give and take. It's interesting to see, though, that if you look at the history of the impact of the Bauhaus, in other words, at its canonization, this process of change and this process of learning from others, in a sense, has been cut off. It's been severed in order to stage the notion that the Bauhaus is a Western notion, transmitting a Western style of building and design out into the world. It's purportedly something that grew out of the West. We've seen this again and again in the history of modernity, that artists of Western modernity who were very much influenced by sources from all over the world have often created a mise-en-scène of their own work that ignores these influences and suggests that they created on the basis of their own artistic and creative drives, cutting themselves off from these roots. So what was missing, actually, in Bauhaus was a policy of solidarity. And that lacking policy of solidarity in the Bauhaus in many realms of modernity had consequences that we see again today if you look at the debate concerning the Humboldt Forum. One project in the House of World Cultures in conjunction with the Goethe Institute and the Bauhaus institutions will be looking at this. It's a major exhibition in March that will address precisely this topic. I'm referring here to the project Bauhaus Imaginista. My last point, let me draw your attention to the fact that today we find ourselves in a situation where it's not the Bauhaus per se, but Bauhaus-like approaches that are essentially defining our world. When I say Bauhaus-like, notions. I mean the idea that technology and design can change the world. In essence, today is what could be called Project California, the Silicon Valley Project. The Silicon Valley Project is also a revolutionary project. And it's a revolutionary project in as much as it quite consciously takes the ballast of meaning that dates from the past, shakes that off, in a sense, discredits meaning. What we understand as communication within society, namely a process of negotiating meaning and significance, is actually replaced by a stimulus response schemata of clicks on the internet. Meaning is thus replaced by quantifying the number of clicks. The French notion of engagement or commitment is replaced by the English term engagement, the click figures for users on the internet. That is a quantifiable unit. That is the key unit for the new economy, in fact. As Felix Stalder last week underscored at an excellent event here, as part of the new alphabet event, we find society being stripped of everything that makes it, society being stripped of meaning. And as a result, there is no space left at all for politics. Everybody ends up being an atomized individual, completely isolated in their own individual little world. That's the situation we face today. And you can find at least comparable attitudes to those in the period immediately after the Bauhaus era. Against this backdrop, I would conclude by asking the following question. What can we learn? Perhaps we can learn more from the failures of the Bauhaus than we actually can from its successes, or what's articulated to the outside world as its successes. So in this spirit, a very warm welcome to all of you. And I'd like to hand over now to Klaus Lederer.